It's religion today, it's ideology today, and our secularist friends also have a faith.
Some kind of Disneyland fantasy.
I know how this is going to get heard in the secular world.
Where the pseudo-Christian masks are off.
That's nonsense, ladies and gentlemen.
Apologetics isn't just about giving answers to other people's questions. It's also about learning to question other people's answers or even question the question itself.
In a Christian worldview.
Well, welcome to Quantum number 81. And this week we go all over the place. Scotland, Finland, Brazil, China, the USA, the UK, Switzerland, Ireland. And all this is being recorded here in Australia and listened to by people in Asia and Africa and America and Europe and all over the place. And that's great. It's great to think about these things. And thanks for all the information, all the stories. But I do want to begin with my back in my home country with a remarkable story in terms of the Scottish Parliament. Now, listen to this young woman.
Thank you, Presiding Officer. Today I present the Scottish Budget for 2020-21. This is a budget that offers vision and leadership at a crucial moment for our country. Last week, the UK formally left the European
Union. That is Kate Forbes, who is a Minister for Finance in the Scottish Government. She has been thrown into the spotlight because the main Minister for Finance was compelled to resign on the day he was due to deliver a budget speech, and Kate Forbes had to step in and take his place. Now, let's leave aside the politics of it. She is, of course, a Scottish Government Minister, therefore SNP. But what I found interesting in that speech was she was opposed by Murdo Fraser for the Scottish Conservatives and Rhoda Grant for Scottish Labour. And all three, Kate Forbes, Murdo Fraser, Rhoda Grant, are Highland MSPs, but they are also Christians. Kate is actually a member of my own church, and she has come under attack already because of being a Christian. The Sun newspaper and others mentioned that there were some, and of course you know that this is going to be the case, LGBTQ, but especially the Tea Party activists who are having a real go at her. But she has many other SNP women who are on her side. So I found this article in the National Review, which I found quite fascinating, from a former school teacher. So this teacher says, I saw it up close when I trained as a teacher, and it's packed full of dangerous nonsense. But what I was intrigued by was the comments there. Somebody called Josh Menny, I think, had attacked Kate Forbes. I'm always concerned when politicians conflate their personal religious beliefs into their work life to the detriment of others, says Menny, indicating zero self-awareness. And I love this quote from the article. Many's mindset is the mindset of a zealous monomaniac. For only a zealot could storm past an actual scandal, i.e. a 42-year-old minister tipped to be the next leader of Scotland forced to resign for creeping on a child, to confront an imaginary one, i.e. a church-going minister tipped to be the next finance secretary who happens to believe, as other ministers who do not go to church believe, that the legal definition of male and female ought not to be changed overnight. So it is hard. I'm saying this overall. It is hard to be a Christian in contemporary politics. I know that people look and say, well, it's like Queen Esther for such a time as this. I think we're much more like Joseph, that we end up serving pagan kings, but we do what we can. We seek to present Christ. We fight against evil. We seek to be salt and light. I'm a little bit disgusted at the number of Christians who, because of their political views, have a go at Kate Forbes. With friends like that, who needs enemies? No, we should pray for her. We may not agree with all her politics, but we should pray for her, and we should encourage her, and we should encourage other Christians involved in different political parties as well. It's difficult enough for us without adding to their burden. Now, having said that, not all Christians involved in politics do a good job. I am disturbed by Nicky Morgan, who's an evangelical, but who has gone along with the progressive agenda, not just gone along with it, but promoted it. And she has come up with a proposal which is really quite disturbing. Remember last week we mentioned Franklin Graham and how for the first time a Christian was being refused access to speak in a public space because their views on same-sex marriage and Islam were deemed to be against the law. Well, Nicky Morgan, in charge of the government's digital strategy, internet strategy, is coming up with something which sounds fascinating. The government is officially announcing its plans to censor companies that host harmful content such as violence, terrorism, cyberbullying, and child abuse on the internet. Now, there are lots of things on the internet we would want to see out of the picture. However, it's when this cyberbullying phrase is used, because it's going to be managed by Ofcom, and they're going to create rules for content that is not illegal but has the potential to cause harm. So what I'm putting forward in this podcast, for example, someone could say, this will cause harm, and it gets banned. This is a way of getting government censorship, and it is embarrassing that a Christian like Nicky Morgan is actually advocating this. The head of the Adam Smith Institute, Matthew Leach, said this, make no mistake, free speech is under threat. The government is proposing the most censorious online speech regime in the Western world. We must not be fooled by platitudes about freedom of expression. The inevitably woke bureaucrats in Ofcom will be deciding what sort of speech is and is not allowed across much of the internet. They will have extraordinary discretion to decide who is the target and what is harmful. This is a recipe for disaster for anyone that thinks differently to the Notting Hill set, i.e. yours truly. Any correct but unpopular opinions will not just come under attack from the Twitterati, but the law itself. And we see this censorship in another way. What's Switzerland famous for? Well, lots of things. Chocolate. We'll come on to chocolate in a moment. But Switzerland has just passed a law which making homophobia illegal. Now, again, that sounds great. It sounds fine. Except this. What is homophobia? If I'm opposed to same-sex marriage, if I support the Bible's teaching on homosexuality, does that mean I'm homophobic? You can go to jail for 3 years for saying that. Anyone who makes homophobic comments in public would be punishable with up to 3 years in prison. That includes television broadcasts, social media posts, and discrimination against gay or bisexual people in public venues. A combination of the law, and as we always say, the corporations, is where this censorship comes in. So Switzerland is also famous for chocolate, as we pointed out. There is a Swiss company called Laderach who make wonderful chocolate. Swiss Airlines have ended their partnership with them because Laderach do not support same-sex marriage. They are pro-life in terms of abortion, and they support marriage between a man and a woman. An opinion that's not illegal yet. However, Swiss Airlines have banned them. And in another extraordinary case where all this is going, in Finland, let's move to Finland, there's a lawmaker, a politician, a pastor's wife, who is being probed by police because she questioned the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Finland's partnership with the Helsinki Pride event. And she wrote a booklet 15 years ago entitled Male and Female, He Created Them. In this, she argues for the biblical definition of humanity as male and female, and the Office of the Prosecutor Council of Finland has issued a press release saying that she's to be investigated for a possible hate crime. Yeah. This is the brave new world. We gotta watch it, and we gotta fight it. Okay, let's shift over to South America and to Brazil. Have a listen to this.
Palavras antes proibidas começaram a se tornar comum. Deus, família, pátria. Somos o seu povo, uma só raça.
How's your Portuguese? That is an extraordinary event where thousands of Christians, I think it, in fact it was ended up being about 140,000 people attended in three different stadiums. The National Stadium, the Brazilian National Stadium, the Morumbi Stadium, and the Allianz Parque Stadium in São Paulo. 140,000 young people attended. It was a Christian rally. 1.7 million watched on the Portuguese live stream and over 500,000 on the English live stream. And the president of Brazil turned up. He wasn't invited as a guest, but he turned up. And what you've just heard is him professing his faith in Jesus Christ. I think that's quite extraordinary. Now, it is fascinating. We're talking about politicians in, or Christians rather, who are in politics. So we mentioned some in Scotland. I could mention some in England. I could mention some in Ireland. I could mention in Switzerland as well. I could mention here in Australia, the Prime Minister is a Pentecostal, and here we are, have in Brazil. There really is just this astonishing example of being salt and light. Now, we have to be careful of people using Christianity for political advancement, but I don't know about you, but I found that quite encouraging. This, though, not so encouraging. Let's come back across the Atlantic and let's go to Ireland. And here are some people celebrating. Now, in an astonishing result in the Irish general election, there are three parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, who have been like the Labour and Conservative, the mainstream parties, but the largest party, they ended up, each pretty well ended up with about a quarter of the vote. But the largest party by a small number was Sinn Féin. And the song that you heard was an IRA song. I'm of an age that the thought of the IRA being elected to power in Ireland is profoundly disturbing. The IRA were a terrorist group who killed hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And for me, it's an astonishing result. Kvaradka, who's kind of the ultimate in woke politicians, they've turned against him. And this is populism again. Let me be honest. I don't think that people are voting for them because of history or the IRA or anything like that. I think they voted for them very simply because they're fed up with the main parties, because they're concerned about issues like housing and so on. I was kind of amused at a commentator who said, "We vote for a terrorist front group because of legitimate concerns about housing. Other countries vote for nasty populists because they are racist and bad." And he called it Irish moral exceptionalism. I think the other take on this would be to say that this is the cautionary tale, as my friend Tom Gallagher says, of the leader of a small European country with abundant economic problems and a poor record of governance, who is encouraged by powerful figures in the EU to take an aggressive stand towards its neighbour Britain as it sought to leave the EU. It's a cautionary tale of it being, of them losing out. And I think actually these are extremely concerning times for Ireland and for their neighbours in the United Kingdom. What do you think about racism? I genuinely find the idea of judging someone by the color of their skin or by their ethnic origin, I find it utterly abhorrent. It's utterly anti-Christian, but it's just abhorrent. Well, I want to mention a couple of racist things. And actually, I think these people who are professing to be anti-racist are themselves encouraging racism, because I think deep down, they're racist as well. So listen, first of all, to this from the United States.
Excuse me. If y'all didn't know, this is the MSC. And frankly, there's just too many white people in here, and this is a space for people of color. So just be really cognizant of the space that you're taking up, because it does make some of us POCs uncomfortable when we see too many white people in here. It's only been open for 4 days, and frankly, there's the whole university for a lot of y'all to be at, and there's very few spaces
you heard it.
For us.
There are too many white people in here. And then that dreadful phrase, POC, people of color. I'm sorry, I'm a person of color. We all have color, just different colors. But here is a woman saying, white people, get out. We need a separate space for our own development. You know, when I was a student, we used to protest against that. You know what it was called? It was called apartheid. And apartheid in South Africa is wrong. Why is apartheid in America or Australia or Europe okay? And then listen to this from the University of Sheffield.
Academia has historically been a white-dominated space, meaning that many of the writers, thinkers, and academics who are traditionally studied are white too. This doesn't necessarily mean that they're the ones producing the best work, rather that they simply better fit into an academic culture that's affected by the same racial biases that we see in the rest of society. If you're ever unhappy with something in your curriculum, don't be afraid to raise it with your academic rep or your education officer. If you witness a racist incident or are ever the target of one, it's really important that you talk to us about it so that we can address the problem. You can either make a confidential disclosure or formal report by using our online report and support service or by phoning the university security services. Either way, we'll deal with it sensitively to ensure that you feel comfortable and safe throughout the process. You can choose to engage.
This is Sheffield University being as woke as they can possibly get. A nice, calm, smooth voice telling us about racism and how we shouldn't be racist, which of course we shouldn't be, but then going on to talk about decolonizing the curriculum. And apparently the reason they study Shakespeare in Sheffield is because of white supremacy. Yep, that is the madness of where we have gone. Do you know that 4% of the population in the United Kingdom are what they are called BAM, Black, Asian, Minority Ethnic? 8% of students are. I'm just curious as to what systemic racism and discrimination is in there. There's an astonishing ignorance involved in all of this. I think, you know, the other thing that bothered me about this was talking about you can report microaggressions to campus security. This is the brave new world of the modern Western university. And of course, that brings us on to this week's Trans Madness. Rebecca Long-Bailey, Labour leadership contender, has signed up to a pledge to expel party members who've expressed transphobic views. And these include particular views, which saying that a man is a man and a woman is a woman. You're not going to be allowed to say that. Saying things like, there's no material conflict between the trans rights and women's rights. Well, you do that, you'll be expelled from the Labour Party. So way to go, Labour Party. You lost your working class voters. You need to get them back. And what do? You decide to expel women such as Julie Bindle. And the pushback against this is enormous. Hundreds, thousands of people have started tweeting, expel me. You've decided to expel people who say that men cannot become women. Way to go, Labour. And then I read this amazing article from Graham Linehan. Who is Graham Linehan? Well, have a listen to this.
Father Gridley, Bishop Reddin is here.
Hell's bells. Right, show him in. Dougal, now remember, not a word about the son. Hello, Bishop, how are you? Come on in, sit down. Sit down there, Your Grace, beside Father Dougal. Mrs. Doyle? Some tea, please.
Oh, certainly, Father Crilly.
I'm not sure if that's a programme I was supposed to like or not, but it was Father Ted, and actually I found it hilarious. Well, Linehan wrote this, and he was castigated by some within the Catholic Church for writing such a mockery, really, of the Church, although he would call it a loving mockery. And he says, today I'm one of the most loathed figures on the internet. My speaking events have been cancelled. I've been sued. The police have visited my home and former friends have turned their back on me. Why? Because I've committed the thought crime of believing that biological reality exists. I believe women are females. I believe everyone should be able to present themselves as they wish, but that women's hard-won rights must not be compromised for the benefits of men suffering body dysphoria, which is to say men who feel they are stuck in the wrong body. Well, he's spot on, but boy, the hatred. And of course, he would be expelled from the Labour Party. All right, let's move to this extraordinary speech at the Oscars.
I think whether we're talking about gender inequality or racism or queer rights or indigenous rights or animal rights, we're talking about the fight against injustice. We're talking about the fight against the belief that one nation, one people, one race, one gender for one species has the right to dominate, control, and use and exploit another with impunity. I've been a scoundrel in my life. I've been selfish. I've been cruel at times, hard to work with, and ungrateful. But so many of you in this room have given me a second chance. And I think that's when we're at our best, when we support each other, not when we cancel each other out for past mistakes, but when we help each other to grow, when we educate each other, when we guide each other towards redemption. That is the best of humanity.
That was, of course, Joaquin Phoenix. I love him in Johnny Cash, Walk the Line. I just absolutely love that. Great actor. Think Gladiator. But that speech, oh, so much. I mean, I've written about it, so you can go to the blog and see. But particularly, let me just mention this one thing. We educate to redemption. We can redeem our, we can guide ourselves to redemption. No. See, Hollywood can't, and I don't think humanity can. This is the Hollywood that is apparently filled with sexism and racism. This is the Hollywood that applauded Harvey Weinstein and stood to give a standing ovation to the man they knew who was a rapist, Roman Polanski. I don't think we want our education and guidance from them. We can't rescue ourselves. Hollywood's not going to rescue us. But humanity can't rescue itself. We need rescued. We need redemption. We need salvation. And guess what? That's where the Christian gospel comes in, because God did send a rescuer. God so loved the world that he sent his son. And boy, do we need rescue. Here is another clip of someone else, Philip Schofield.
We sit here every day, mm-hmm. and I'm over there, mm-hmm. and some amazingly brave, incredible person is sitting here,
yeah.
and I'm listening to their story and thinking, oh my God, you're so brave, oh my God, you're so yeah. brave. And I'm thinking, I have to be that person.
Yeah.
I have to be that person. Because I think all you can be in your life is honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And I was getting to the point where I knew I wasn't honest with myself. I was getting to the point where I didn't like myself very much because I wasn't being honest with myself. Mm. And so, you know, when is the right time? When is the right time to do it? And as a family, it's the right time.
But there'll be many people that wouldn't.
Now, again, I refer you to a brilliant article by Brendan O'Neill on Spike. But let me just make one comment about this. If I, or any celebrity, I'm not a celebrity, but if a celebrity had come on television and said that he was leaving his wife and going to live with another woman, would he be lauded as brave and a hero? No. But because Schofield is saying that, and there are a whole range of questions about various relationships and things involved, but even supposing it was absolutely squeaky clean, why do you need to go on television and publicly humiliate your wife? It just doesn't make sense. O'Neill says this: brave used to mean going to war or risking life and limb for your political beliefs, or smuggling contraband literature into tyrannical countries, or going to the moon. Now it means being a millionaire who uses his comfy position as the king of daytime TV to tell everyone he's gay. Brave, courageous, amazing, wonderful, powerful. These are some of the histrionic words that have been used to describe Philip Schofield's outing of himself on This Morning Couch. What has everyone been smoking? Now let's go to China just before we finish with this amazing story of the Chinese doctor who discovered the virus and who has paid with his life for this. I think, under suspicious circumstances. But he wrote a poem before he died, and it's a beautiful, beautiful poem. Who would ever have realized I was going to die? My soul is in heaven looking at the white bed on which lies my own body, with the same familiar face. Where are my parents and my dear wife, the lady I once had a hard time chasing? There's a light in the sky. At the end of that light is the heaven that people often talk about. But I'd rather not go there. I'd rather go back to my hometown in Wuhan. I have my new house there for which I still have to pay off the loan every month. How can I give up? for my parents without their son, how sad must it be? He goes on to say later on, I won't read the whole poem. Goodbye, my dear ones. Farewell, Wuhan, my hometown. Hopefully after the disaster, you'll remember someone once tried to let you know the truth as soon as possible. Hopefully after the disaster, you'll learn what it means to be righteous. No more good people should suffer from endless fear and helpless sadness. And he finishes with this. Do you recognize this? I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness. 2 Timothy 4:7. The doctor was a Christian. We began with Christian politicians. We're ending with a Christian superhero, a doctor who gave his life in order to help and to save people. Going to play out. You can support Quantum if you like by going to the Podbean fundraiser. Please do continue to keep sending me information. We're playing out with Johnny Cash, the song that I wish had been played at the Oscars. God's going to cut you down. I was standing in a store once, a record store, and this song came on and everybody stopped and listened. It's warning us that there is a day of judgment coming. But as we've been hearing, there is also a Savior, someone who gave his life for us. God bless you and see you next week.
Well, my goodness gracious, let me tell you the news. My head's been wet with the midnight dew. I've been down on bended knee, talking to the man from Galilee. He spoke to me with a voice so sweet, I thought I heard the shuffle of angels sweep. He called my name and my heart stood still when he said, John, go do my will. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut him down. Tell him that God's gonna cut him down. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.